more trouble. Well, no more evaluation.
That's probably safe.
That's what our interest is.
That's what I said.
I'm not sure that's true.
That
say it all the time, but people say that they're fear or their credit crunch, you know, and that affects their market. In fact, the psychology of those guys a lot. They talk themselves into the fact that there is going to be a credit crunch.
But all the time, it seems to me that they're all considerably exaggerated, but there is some cause for concern and caution about all of that. With respect to the revival of inflation, I think we have not yet tested very seriously, but I believe there is a deal of potential loss of that. But also that really dominating force in 1973, the demand supply situation will be reasonably accommodating to a moderate rate of inflation once we get over this food price thing. And I think we have more and more reason for confidence that in the second half of the year we are going to get over the food price thing. The latest steps that we take are quite powerful, and it's amazing things that we've been able to do. Very confident that we've been able to do them. We may have more and tougher problems on the food side, but so far we've managed to live by the scourges.
Like what?
Well, I mean,
which do you think?
Like the cheese.
The thing that's in there. I mean, I know we did.
On the interest rate side, you've already saw that, Mr. Speaker. And, but, well, I'd like to get on it one of the alert ways, but we don't think that, what we do think the present course of policy is that the correct one require change at the moment. And we should get to start with this issue of view of change.
Well, there's a marked contrast, I think, between the last time the economy got somewhere near where it is today, that is, with unemployment declining and prices at least a little more higher than they were in 2000, in the mid-60s, which was followed by a budget explosion and a very rapid increase in the money supply. We haven't talked about that so much.
It was in 67 or 68.
Right.
The typical mistake was in 1969.
Well, 55,
69.
Well, but how did that start? The war.
Well, here's what happened in 1969. You had the second installment in the reduction of the personal income tax. The second installment in the reduction of the corporate income tax. A new large reduction in excise taxes. The Great Society programs on the expenditure side. A highly expansionary monetary policy, and on top of that, the war in Vietnam.
You think that's what it's worth?
Well, that's when you got the that's when the fatal mistakes were made. It started in the fall. 1963, when prices of raw materials began rising. And between June of 1964 and June of 1965, the wholesale price level rose 3%. So the signs were all there for caution and moderation. But then they just pulled every stop. Every weapon of economic stimulation was involved. It's an extraordinary.
It didn't reflect itself, I guess why you said 67 and 68, it didn't reflect itself in budget deficits, budget deficits in terms of unemployment budget deficits until 67 and 68. 66 was some, but
there were just getting the budget deficits.
Well, the budget deficits were getting
bigger each year.
The budget deficit each year.
The mistakes were made in 65, the consequences were made.
Right. We're not that.
No, I think George is absolutely right. The economy now is approaching full employment, but on the fiscal side, we're practicing, or making every effort to practice moderation and likewise monetary.
Let me ask you a question that has to do with the tax thing. What you're talking about putting in investment tax, of course, there you get in this whole argument of the power of the president again, that sort of thing.
No, not the way I put it forward. Because
Congress did that.
Congress would be a partner to deal with that argument.
Who in Congress becomes the problem? They don't want to delegate to any one of them all the authority necessary to act with the speed that it needs to be dealt with in order to do the job. The problem is that if they are a party, who of them will be the party?
Well, the president decides that a change in investment tax credit is necessary. He makes that proclamation. All right, now the Congress will have 60 days to act under Reorganization Act machinery. During that 60 days, period. The House turns it down, well, then the president's proposal is dead. If they don't act, then the president's proposal becomes law. Now, I have a monetary
problem with the investment credit is the decision making by prospective buyers.
Well, this front is becomes effective as of the date of the president's proclamation.
But you don't know really what condition you're in, assuming such a proclamation were made yesterday. Until the end of 60 days, I, as a prospective buyer, don't know whether to buy or not buy during that 60 days. And then what you get is the whole accordion process of holding up orders, accelerating orders, and the whole thing begins to work partly counterproductive during that 60-day time. That's the problem in the world of decision-making by buyers. He sits there trying to play the game, the other side of, or trying to guess the decision. That's why that has to go faster.
That's true with every piece of living. Well, no, maybe 60 days, you see, is an arbitrary period. Maybe you can get it down to 40.
You don't need that much. There does the nature of it. You can make it a 30-day period. You can be up there on the short run.
The short run is on the
prime minister.
But the government policy, the government decision question, there are a number of economic questions about whether once I've made the decision, how long will be the delay before I get an economic effect? Will it be so long that you come at that it comes at an appropriate time, and that would depend really on the great degree of the discretion of those things used. That if something was used by somebody who wants to take out every wiggle in the index, it will turn out to be destabilizing and perverse at the time. So that's something to worry about, because it will always be us.
Shortly, so he must have gotten a night to do, but you could alert these guys.
Right.
Who cares? gave the fish fine.
The two points that I currently made, we've discussed the, both of these tax changes and questions, and they are rather different as one would analyze the terms suggested. One, the investment tax credit has been moved around a lot since it was passed, since it's been taken off and put on.
That creates
times. And that creates a sort of an uncertainty about it. And it is still under attack by the labor liberal people. Yeah. It's something that ought to be gotten out of the law altogether. So those who think it's a good thing in the law argue, well, the best thing you can do is just to leave it alone for now. Maybe this is a good idea, but don't push it right now. That's one kind of an argument that has been.
Why would this be checking the legislative people?
Yeah. And then the current situation, of course, if it were proposed right now, the only way you would be moving it is to, in effect, to raise taxes through this device as a move to dampen down investment. Within the framework of your general injunction against raising taxes, I don't know whether that would fit or not, but this would be you would be asking for authority that could only be predicted as suggesting an increase in taxes. But we will give you some sooner.
Mm-hmm. We should have more work with the cost of the taxes. The investment tax is variable investment tax credit. I want you to know where it is. We were asked by the Congress to make a study of the housing problem, the instability of the housing industry. What can be done to moderate these fluctuations, to stabilize that industry, partly for the sake of those employed in it, and partly to maintain home building activity at a reasonably high level, more or less consistently. Now, it was in that connection that we came forward with that proposal. Sure, we helped to stabilize the economy, but in addition, it would release funds which otherwise would be going into planned and equipment expenditures. It would release funds for the home building industry. This is of very considerable importance in that context. And that problem will be with us as a matter of probability by the fall of this year. So if this is not the plan, we better start thinking of other plans. Now, we made a study and there were other proposals. This is the most promising one we do for dealing with the housing.
For dealing with it for purposes of getting it built.
Keeping it from sliding down to sharp.
But by the flexible investment credit, I think that just one more point along that line, Mr. President, that maybe if this entity is a very politically sensitive matter of that investment credit one, maybe the best time to bring in, introduce a flexibility is when the most immediate step, the next step to be taken, might be one that has a slight increase, because then you will have less opposition than if it is perceived as one that immediately gives an advantage to business and get the principal in when it, at least at first move, cuts the other way.
I don't feel that.
You're missing a factor of restraint as far as this expansion is concerned, and missing that could be used to assist the home building industry.
I don't feel, George, that politically the idea that, well, this would be a violation of raising taxes and so forth, it would bother too much on this account, because it's so technical and it's going up and down and nobody's going to say, because that it also isn't going to raise taxes for the average guy.
But if you, when we hear from Johnny Thomas, we got questions about the downtown people and brought us to Fox Farms. Look all you've done to business, now business is booming, investment is booming, you're cutting back on consuming, you're cutting back on all the social services. Why don't you take this thing away now? It would be good, typically,
first effect would be?
Would be to hurt the
adverse to business, although, and therefore, releasing some funds.
And that gives us an option to go the other. Well,
let's don't get into something else.
Well, let's don't, yeah, we can look into it later. The point that we have to have in mind, I mean, we know we can't control what happens to the economy in terms of the way. Although it came out reasonably well in 1972, it's not very well in 1970. But we should have in mind that we're looking at here. Year 74 was an important year that we may have to provide some more expansion for certain other purposes. So we should be as severe and
take a little bit more heat now.
Yeah.
Not be severe, but not so.
Well, you know, I just look back, I look back speaking quite candidly to what we did in 1969. I think we turned it too far. Seeing as you are in the long term, but what you're doing. I know it's staying ahead of the curve, but you may have started to lead the curve again, and you did before. I know these fellows, and you know them too. And they say, well, we've got to fight the curve. And of course, let's face it, as I said, as far as the bankers are concerned, they do it. Not that this would ever enter into their provisions, but they make money out of higher interest rates and recession. They never had as good as they had in the 70s in their bank. They were really on high hog.
Yes, when the bankers get after me, we're putting out the squeeze on the right. And I talk to them privately on some orders. I give them some unpublished information. This is not on the public record, but I have it. Okay, when it shows. You look at profits of our corporate system, and these published figures aren't worth a damn. Make some adjustments in them. First, take out the profits of the Federal Reserve. They don't belong there, but they're included. Second, take out the profits of subsidiaries of American corporations abroad. Take that out. Next, take out the profits of financial. What you've got left is profits of domestic non-financial business. Manufacturing, mining, construction, trade, and financing, etc. A real economy. And when you look at those profit figures, what you find is the profits of 1972, a good year, were lower than in 1966. A period during which the gross national product rose by over $400 billion. Well, now, next, let's look at the commercial banks separately. Profits of commercial banks in 1972 were 50% higher than 1966. So they've got nothing to cry about.
But let me augment that with something that pertains at least to the liquids. The profits of commercial banks in 72 would have been much less were it not their international operation. That's where they made it. If they had to report domestic business separately, it would have looked like a terrible year for commercial banks, those that have important foreign operations. They made it overseas in 72 particularly. 71 is just pretty well too.
Well, you see, the real rise in the bank profits came in 1966 and 1970. That's when the major profits occurred.
You say the profits, in other words, the profits of business in this narrowly defined area, though it's not narrowly defined, it's properly defined area, that word. Like, we're not all that good.
I'm saying, all the sweet. I'm saying to you, Mr. President, that as far as profits, American corporate enterprise goes, profits are dangerously low.
Whose
fault is
that?
Something we should do.
It's a very significant observation, I would say.
And yes,
this in turn gives rise to all kinds of other problems with the minimum amount of profit. It leads to the minimum amount of investment. Either new plant, and therefore productivity, minimum investment in new technology, and therefore productivity. The key to
productivity and the ability to compete.
The whole thing in the world. Productivity, this observation has a lot to do with why capital leaves the United States and goes
out. You're so right.
We've got to look at the long-range competitive position of the American economy, and Paul can go around and finagle these figures and so forth, and Art and I could defend the dollar, but in the final, we could say Americans ought to export more, but in the final analysis, unless the American, with our high wage rates, unless the American economy continues to reinvest, continues to get up, by the methods of higher productivity and so forth, we've lost the ball game. Wouldn't that true?
Well, the changes in exchange rates tend to shift this profitability picture for a long time, and that's why the foreign countries don't make it for the squeeze their profits, and it presumably helps us a little bit.
Mr. President, I want to underline your response. I think you made a profoundly important observation. Our objective in this country should be to have private enterprise so healthy, the profit system working so well, that American capitalists, instead of looking for green pastures abroad, put their capital in the
country. Couldn't agree more.
And farmers would be bringing their capital here.
Mr. President, on the international side, that's a good point.
I'd like to discuss that particular point separately. I suppose it might be a very good point to have discussed just so that other people could get the feel of it. I was thinking George and Kennedy. Kennedy should hear this. You know, you get the Secretary of Commerce, the Secretary of Labor, and all these other people, and present it, let's have it in a broad base.
Paper, and then without probably you at that stage, get a little discussion of what some of the things are.
Broad-based, man. You could not participate in this particular You could be there if you have anything to do. I think that's a legitimate thing. Let me say that it's not only, to me, very fascinating, but to me, it's enormously important because we can sit here and not say, gee, the United States is the lowest rates of inflation in the industrial world, the lowest for the major countries. The United States is, we're doing very well. God knows that this is the best market in the world. But if beneath there is that little tumor, now benign, that could become, shall we say, very malignant, we damn well better cut it out now. That's the thing that I'm concerned about. Because we, to all these trends, like we talked about, it's interesting to me to find out that what happened in 1969 and 70, really, the mistake was made in 65. One of the things we've been doing in foreign policy is that we take the long view. We started the China Initiative really in 1967. I started talking about it forever. Kissinger was thinking the same way that we started in 69. It didn't come on until 72. The Soviet Initiative took 4 years to bring on, 3.5 years of constant talk. But we knew what we were going to do in both fields long before. And I think that sometimes here, we may. That's why I like the idea of the budget in 74, 75. And I think if we could look at this business of productivity and profits and so forth, maybe we need to, what we can do about it, maybe we need a tax thing, which could not be sold right now, which goes much further. But let's kick it around.
Very important subject.
All right, let's go to it. Go ahead, George.
Well, I think
let's go to the part that I was understanding, because that falls over.
We might not give a brief description of what has happened and where we are, and then I can summarize some of our thinking, and then there are a couple of developments particularly your letter from Mr. Brand that I think suggests the direction of their thinking very strongly with Bowen and first describe the situation.
Very briefly, the situation as I see it is that we made another exchange rate adjustment 2 weeks ago, which we thought was appropriate. Thank you. but the nervous speculator is out to pick out any weak spot here or there, and he runs to the traditional havens. The Swiss franc has been strong for so many years that there's the Swiss francs, and same thing into the mark, same thing into gold. So you now are forced to the point of decision. I think there are two possible courses here in the most general terms. We can go, in fact, complete the transition which is half there toward floating rates, at least as an interim kind of measure, at least as an interim kind of measure. By the major European countries that are now fixed, moving in that direction, together or separately. Or, I think, potentially, one could get together with those countries and decide to stabilize these rates and hold them with a concerted effort for an indefinite period. I think this could be done if people wanted to do it. And the two actions have different implications and different risks of a sort. Very difficult to judge. I think you can tell where the risks lie in either direction, but assigning probability to them is difficult because we're in unknown territory. We're in territory we haven't been in for many, many years anyway. But it's just pros and cons as I see them. First of all, I think you should say in the Grant letter, suggest the Europeans and conform to your thoughts. The Europeans really are in a mood where they think of floating as their first option. And this is the first time they've been in this mood. Not necessarily happily, but they, for one reason or another, are inclined to think that's the primary direction in which to go. Now, the question that arises there, I think, are two in my judgment. Whether, given the upset state of market psychology, these folks will be smooth and stabilizing, or whether the market will take it as another indication of kind of official weakness and be out to crack every exchange rate they can and push it all over too wide a spectrum of fluctuation and kind of undermine confidence in the whole system, which is already sorely undermined, and maybe leading back to domestic confidence. In one sense, it leaves all our options open, I think, for future reform. In another sense, by leaving the European options open too, it creates opportunities for others to try to impose their view out of a messy situation. So it's very fluid. Both in the sense of, I think, immediate market responses and its effects on financial confidence around the world and its potential for longer-term economic reform. Monetary reform. If it worked out smoothly, if you had smooth flows, that would be fine. Nothing in our interest, I think, basically. But that says this is inherently a bad action. But you can't be sure of that because so much depends upon market psychology. Now we can, I think, in the alternate course, is make a dramatic gesture, more than a gesture, but if we have to be willing to put money behind it, I don't think there's any big financial risk. But we can make a dramatic show against the speculators. And I think win in the short run. The question is whether we have given kind of hostages to fortune in the future by dedicating ourselves to this particular rate structure in a way that will give us problems a year from now.
What is your comment? Well, let me, I think from the group discussion, there's a general view that there's nothing wrong with have to be prepared to go 1, 2, 5, 10. You have to be prepared to say, we will put up the money needed to do the job, and then proceed on that basis. And there is a kind of irony to that, I suppose, in that if people are convinced that that is the attitude you have, maybe that you don't have to spend very much money. So that it's sort of like a run on a bank, and the banker that puts his money in the front window and says, come on and get it, and I've got money, puts out the run faster than somebody who kind of puts it out piecemeal. I'm sure it's like that.
Easier for them to do it if England and Italy are allowed to be separate,
yeah.
Then they must be included. But
way in which the system has unfolded since August 71. In effect, we have been moving toward more flexibility in the exchange rate system. And leaving aside the amount of changes in the exchange rates, there has been a great increase in the flexibility of the system. And we now have the Japanese floating, the British floating, the Italian floating, the Swiss floating, the Canadian floating. So that I suppose it must be true that one reason for the pressure against those who aren't voting is that that's sort of the only pressure point there is, and they become more isolated to this degree.
But isn't it just to answer a question, isn't it really the interest of nations that float to have some that don't? I mean, what the hell does it do on the float? You see what I mean? I would think the British and the Canadians probably like it as far as in relation to the U.S., right?
Well, some...
They wouldn't want to float themselves. Do they want us to float?
A currency. We're, in a sense, in a position, unless we engage in intervention, where we're floating as far as we're concerned, and we're not, actually, with respect to the mark, only because the Germans intervene so heavily.
I think you're right. These smaller countries like a big stable unit against which they can operate. And the more people that have a fixed